So at that point, I turned around. I remember turning around, I mean psychologically, and looking at my humanity as my curriculum, and then saying, well, what are the courses that make up the curriculum? Well, there's family, you know, 106. There's my old father, he's tired, he's ill, he's done well, you know, he's, my stepmother's not well. It would be good if I lived there and took care of them. I don't just base there. That would be learning family 105, because in order to honor my human incarnation, it has a lot of components to it, and one of them is that I'm a member of a family. What does it mean to honor it? Does it mean to do everything they say? No, that's just their minds. It means to listen your way into, quote, what they call in the East, your dharma, your way. So that if you're grabbing at being a family member or pushing away being a family member, you're not free in form. The freedom in form comes from neither aversion nor attachment, but just fulfilling. You just kind of die into, in this case, sonness. And there was Dad being dadness, his dadness. And through those 10 years or so, it was far out. I mean, I went from where people would say to me, aren't you good taking care of your father? Can you hear that? That's like sacrifice. Why would you be sacrificing? Well, you'd be sacrificing your independence. And somehow we got into a wonderful set of myths about independence. And we got so enamored of the myth of independence that we kept cutting off all of our lifelines that fed us. Because I don't mean being related as an individual to the family, I mean being part of the family. Part of the family being part of your identity. You're a member of a family. Not just a separate entity relating to family, but actually that's another definition of yourself as a member of a family. And when you go into certain tribes and cultures, you can feel that their basic identity is in their social role or in their family identity, more than in their personal individual, what's in it for me kind of concept. And I ended up, when Dad died, feeling what grace I had. I was given that opportunity to surrender that much into just being a part of the family. And realizing that as I did that, I got fed by that acknowledgement. And suddenly I felt fulfilled by having been able to take care of my father in the last years of his life. Now, you can take them one at a time. I mean, you can take each of our different parts of our incarnation, like your sexual identity, your identity with a nation state, your identity with a community, your identity with certain values, your identity with certain age. Identity is part of an ecosystem, it's part of a cosmology. To honor means to honor all of them. You are all of it, and you're, you know. The myths of individuality are the myths of the mind, of the intellect. They're very afraid of the connection that the heart has with all things. But you and I have started to trust our intuition. We don't fully trust it yet. But we're beginning to recognize that there is a way in which we are already wise. There are certain things we know. We know that it really allows things to stay open and living between human beings when they are as truthful with each other as they can be. We know that. I know that, don't you? And yet, what we find is that we're living in social institutions that don't reflect that inner thing we know. I mean, we all watch Oliver North say, I lied to Congress, you know, for the good of whatever. And that's the social institution, one of them we live in, where everybody says, of course he lies to Congress. And they say, wouldn't you? That's a good one. There are things we know in our intuitive heart about compassion, for example. Because if you have opened, if you know that connection to all things, you may be scared shitless of it, but if you know of it, if you know you're part of an ecosystem and you're part of a social ecological system and you're part of family and you're part of all that, you have an identity with all of that. And then the predicament is that all the suffering in it is your suffering. And there's part of you that knows that. And that you realize that to be fully human, you have to embrace all suffering. That's so far out. Because most of us are building our sanity on the denial of suffering. I mean, how do you and I get hold of the fact that today, perhaps 35,000 women watched their babies die of malnutrition? I mean, take any one of those mothers and then multiply it by 35,000 every day. How would you handle that kind of vastness of suffering? How you handle that determines whether you get fed by life and whether you stay alive in the universe. Because if you deny it in order to be happy, that happiness is not true happiness. And that's part of the problems with our myths in this culture. Because our myths create the model that if you become the most somebody in your specialness, and you acquire in any way possible, you are a hero figure within that mythic structure. I mean, I call your attention to Donald Trump, for example. Now, you may snicker and not want him as a mythic hero figure, but he is. He is a hero figure in this culture. And when I look at that, it's a little like, you know, in those tribes where they take a maiden and they honor her for a year and then they boil her or throw her off a cliff or something like that. I mean, the Donald Trump myth, not Donald Trump, he's just a poor schlump that's caught in the, he's been selected to play out the myth. You know, and he gets the feeling of, wow, I'm Donald Trump. Enjoy, baby, you can have it. I mean, Donald Trumpness is an obscenity. Because how must a person close their heart to keep so single-minded on that while all around them are the have-nots and the people that are falling by the wayside just because of the way he is living? And I say, I'm not talking about the human being that's Donald Trump. I'm talking about the role. As Thomas Berry said, we have a dysfunctional cosmology. It just doesn't work for what we need at the moment. It just doesn't work.